18. Owen! My father shouts, his arms outstretched toward his son. I'm faster than I remember being, sprinting down the mountainside, eyes wide. It's happening again. The sound of his voice is drowned out by the growing buzz and rumble. It will pass, I say, attempting to reassure my father. We'll be okay. He says nothing, but gives me a serious stare after collecting Owen in his arms. As a father, his sole mission right now is to keep my younger self safe. The look in his eye says he has no idea how to do that, and that he doesn't share my faux confidence, though he attempts to hide that from Owen. Just close your eyes and hold on, he says. It will pass. Just let it pass. Stay relaxed, just like before. I find myself taking his advice. While keeping my weight on Boone's back, I let myself relax, welcoming the flux, rather than resisting it. Boone, on the other hand, loses his shit. He hasn't lived through this yet, hasn't been torn from his own time and deposited in another, hasn't seen the distorted wave rolling down the mountain or experienced the thunderous roar of its passing. His scream blends in with a cacophony of sound. I close my eyes to avoid feeling sickened by the sight of the world shattering and bending around me. My insides twist as the effect passes through us, but it's not nearly as bad this time. When the sound of it races downhill, I open my eyes again. Steam rises from my wet arms. Goosebumps rise up as the temperature shift hits my skin. It's at least 80 degrees. For a moment, I think it's summer again, but then I look up and find the trees covered in buds, ready to sprout leaves. A warm spring, the air perfumed with the smell of new growth. This is my favorite season in Appalachia. It feels hopeful, even if nothing has changed for most of the people living in these mountains. Beneath me, Boone heaves. I stand before he can puke, watching as he retches into the damp, leafy forest floor. What? He manages to say, but that's all he gets out. He doesn't need to finish the question. I'll wait till you're done giving your lunch back to the earth, I say. Then I'll attempt to explain what I know. I meet my father's eyes and then my own. To all of you. It takes Boone's body another 30 seconds to stop revolting against the sudden shift through time. He pushes himself against a tree trunk, staring up at the blue sky above, now easily visible through the collection of ruby buds. Where's the snow? All the fight and bravado have fled Boone. He's now just a confused and weary man. His friend Buck has been spared the negative effects of being carried through time on account of his being unconscious. He'll be thrown for a loop when he wakes up, both from the shift in time and the concussion he'll no doubt be sporting. Speaking of concussions, while some of my nausea fades, a good portion remains. I'm not 100% steady on my feet either. All thanks to Buck's giant fists. If I don't get some rest soon, reaching Synergy and finding Cassie and Levi will be the least of my problems. I collect my father's rifle from the ground where it's partially embedded in soil. Has the terrain changed? It looks largely the same, but it's possible the ground has shifted. I glance uphill and note that fallen tree behind which my father and Owen hid is now standing tall. My eyes widen as I consider the horrifying question. What happens if time shifts and you're standing where a tree once was? Or even worse, another person? Ain't you gonna answer me? Boone looks close to losing his mind. A man of his education during this time period is more likely to chalk up the change in season to witchcraft. Appalachian people have always been a superstitious lot, believing in supernatural hoodoo as surely as they do Jesus Christ. I sit down across from him, rifle cradled in my lap. I massage my temples and try to think of a way to explain what's happening. Hey, my father says. He's standing above me, holding out a hand. For your pain. I hold my hand out and accept 3 acetaminophen pills. Then he unclips a water bottle from his hip and offers it. I take the pills and the water, grateful for my father's preparedness. I nod my thanks, swallow the pills, and turn to Boone. I'm going to ask you a question and I want a straight answer. When he says nothing, I ask, what year is it? His face screws up. Now why would I answer the question? I growl, my patience for long dead assholes at an end. 1887, he says. Now what? I hold out a hand, silencing him. I look my father in the eyes. And what about you two? What's the year?
1985,
Owen answers. That ain't, Boone shakes his head. You've lost your minds. And for you? My father asks, already catching on. 2019. I see a flicker of surprise in my father's eyes, then resignation to the fact that we're being tossed through time. Owen, on the other hand, is thrilled.
You're from the future?
Poor shit, Boone mumbles.
Are there flying cars?
Owen asks.
A colony on Mars? Teleporters?
I forgot how much I used to love science fiction. None of those things, but we do have the internet. He is hardly impressed. And robots that look like people. His eyes widen.
Like the Terminator?
Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California, I say, remembering that I had a poster of him in full Conan regalia, posing with Red Sonja on my bedroom wall.
Whoa,
my young self says, now impressed with the future, despite the lack of flying cars and interplanetary colonies. Failed to see how he'd make a worthwhile governor, my father says. More muscle than brains. You don't even want to know who our president is. I chuckle, picturing my father's response to the news. He's a staunch Republican, but in the 80s, politics still had a measure of sanity. Then again, it was Reagan who ushered in the age of celebrities becoming politicians.
I'm sorry, Boone says and then shouts, but I don't know what in tarnation y'all are going on about. Where is the damn snow? Where the hell are we?
We haven't gone anywhere, I tell him. We're still on the same mountainside, still in the same woods. We're just in a different time period.
What do you mean, time period?
I mean, it's no longer 1887.
And what year are you proposing it is?
A shrug. No way to know unless we meet someone. Since the first wave in 2019, I've experienced four jumps back in time. The first was 1985. I look at my father. That's when I ran into you in the truck. We were still trying to figure it out. But you knew something was off, my father observes. I saw the way you were avoiding looking at me. Even now, it's making you uncomfortable. I see where the conversation is going, and I know where it ends, but I'm not sure I'm ready for that, and I have no idea what the consequences might be. When it comes to Boone and Chafin and Arthur and all the men associated with him, I can't think of a solid connection to my future. But my father and my younger self, everything said and done in their presence could affect my future. Best guess, I say, hoping to shift the conversation away from that questionable subject. We're sometime in the 1800s. Longest jump back so far was 64 years. But you don't know. They could be longer. I shake my head. I don't know much of anything aside from the fact that the people responsible for all this are at the top of this mountain. At the mine? My father asks.
Ain't nothing up there but stone and wind, Boone says.
In my time, the mine is closed. I note the disappointed look on my father's face. He invested his life, literally, in that mine, and he believed in its long-term potential to transform our community. A company named Synergy bought a Dell and a lot of the land in and around town. I'm not really certain about what they were doing, but I know there was a lot of cutting-edge science involved.
You're saying we've been caught up in some kind of physics experiment gone wrong?
My father asks.
That's pretty much the gist, yeah. And you know this because
I work for them. My father tenses. Insecurity, I add. I didn't know what they were doing, and I honestly still don't. But I aim to find out, and if I can, set things right.
Then we'll be joining you, my father says. I ain't going nowhere with any of you all, Boone says. Might as well shoot me now. Get it over with.
I push myself to my feet, doing my best to hide my continuing state of wooziness. I brandish the rifle, letting it make up for my lack of physical prowess. You're going to go back to your people and see that they're okay. Then you're going to not attack, kill, or capture anyone you might come across from any time. If you find someone, tell them what you know and try to keep them with you. Whatever enemies you had, they've likely not yet been born. You understand?
Can't say I understand, Boone pushes himself up. But I'll do what you ask until I find out your line, or this is some kind of hex.
I motion to Buck, who's just beginning to stir. And take him with you. The rifle is heavy in my hands, but I manage to raise it toward Boone's head. Now then, before all that, what about my friends? Are they alive?
Boone nods. Last I saw him, and that was downhill, about a quarter mile. Farther by now, if they haven't been caught. How many men did you send after them? 10? Anything I can say to make them believe you sent me to stop them? Shoot enough of them and they'll start listening, he says with a lopsided grin. When I don't smile with him, he clears his throat. Apologies, that wasn't actually a joke, just struck me funny is all. I sigh at the idea of taking more lives, but I'm not fond of my only other option. When Buck grunts and rolls himself over, stunned and disoriented by the change in scenery, I motion to him and say, explain the situation as best you can to your man here. Send him back to your people.
What about me?
Boone asks. You're coming with us. I look to my father and without saying a word ask if he's all right with that arrangement. I probably should have asked him first, but I'm not about to abandon Cassie and Levi, and there's no way I'm letting my father and Owen out of my sight. A subtle nod from my father confirms our plan moving forward and that all the admiration and affection I've had for my father's memory wasn't tainted by the many years without him. He's as brave and strong-willed as I remember. Only I don't remember this. If I did, at least I'd have some inkling of what we might run into on this time-fractured mountainside. Based upon my experiences so far, I'm pretty sure it will be nothing good.